Hey, it's Dr. Mike T. Nelson here with not another fitness podcast for fitness geeks only. This week we're talking about micronutrients that you may consider in a supplemental form. Or you can translate that into micronutrients that you may be kind of low in. Now, again, here we're not talking about frank deficiencies, although we have seen that with the one we're going to talk about today more so, which is kind of surprising. But we're looking at this more just through the lens of health and fitness and performance. So today we're talking about the sunshine vitamin, vitamin D. And vitamin D has kind of gone through everything from people being too low to it being too high. There was some press a couple years ago about vitamin D was evil. The press reports, this is going back to even 2014, stating that vitamin D supplements are not helping you, they're not good, they're pointless. And it gets to be kind of confusing. Right, and one of the confusing points on this is when you look at research, especially for something that we can test for levels in your body, a lot of times what researchers will do in order to maintain a randomized, placebo-controlled, all these fancy, geeky, good words with their study is they'll take a population of people, they'll split them in half. They'll look at some sort of data on them, make sure they're equally split. They'll give, let's say, one group 2,000 IUs of vitamin D per day. The other group, they'll maybe give them a placebo. And then they'll compare them and go, oh, look at these effects. Or, oh, we didn't see any effect. Now, at surface level, you know, that kind of sounds like a good design, should be useful. However, the downside is that we would really want to know what are their intrinsic levels of vitamin D. We'll get into how to measure that as a proxy. And maybe then divide them into a group that's, you know, maybe normal or low. Or just subset out the people who are low, below a certain cutoff. Give them a supplement, in this case, vitamin D, and then retest their blood levels, see where their blood levels got to, and then look at outcomes of the trial. You can even get fancier and try to supplement them up to a specific level using the blood level marker as one of the outcomes, and then look and see what differences you've made. To me, that's a much cleaner way of doing it. It is a few more steps. But in the first case, you're kind of stuck with they may not have low levels of vitamin D. Maybe they do. We know that levels of vitamin D do vary a lot from one person to the next, and definitely vary a lot by what region you're living in. So I think looking at a blood marker, using supplements as a way to get them up to a specific blood marker, and then looking at the outcome is a much better way of doing it. So that's one difference methodologically looking at the research. We're not going to bamboozle you with too much more of that. So what data do we have to say that vitamin D is low? And as you're aware of, you can get vitamin D from sources. The U.S., like fortified milk, is probably one of the top vitamin D sources as a population. And as you already know, sunlight is the main form of getting vitamin D. Little photons from the sun interact on the skin. Body goes through a series of different processes and manufactures vitamin D from sunlight. And one of the questions I've always wondered is, well, what about like the Eskimos and people in like northern Scandinavian countries and northern Canada, maybe even northern Russia? Like, how do these indigenous people lived there for many, many years, centuries? They didn't seem to suffer, rickets or just acute low levels of vitamin D, especially in the past. Like, what did they do? If you're in northern Alaska, you could probably run around buck naked all year, and you're really not going to get a ton of vitamin D from the sun. Yeah, maybe you'll get a little bit more in the summer, and we do know that vitamin D is a fat-soluble hormone, so you can store a fair amount of it. But man, you'd have to have some pretty high stores to make it through winter. And when I looked into it, what's fascinating is many of these cultures have different ways of doing it. But one of the methods is they would pick fresh mushrooms that they could find. Again, these are usually only grown, obviously, in the summer months, and depending on location and what population you study. And then they would dry them in the sunlight. They would keep these dried mushrooms, these fungi, through the winter, and then add them to various soups and different foods they would consume. It turns out if you take mushrooms and you put them in the sunlight, the UV light interacts with them and creates a form of vitamin D2. And this vitamin D2 then can be absorbed once you consume them. Now, there is a little bit of a difference between vitamin D2 versus D3. The short version on that is D2 tends to be much faster, quote unquote, acting, meaning it doesn't hang around in the body for a long period of time. D3 definitely hangs around for a lot longer. So the test, if you go to your physician for D3, the proxy measure for it is something called 25-hydroxyvitamin D. The proxy measure for vitamin D2 is 1-25 hydroxy. So if you're going to your physician, you're getting vitamin D tested. Most of the time now, they're going to use the 25-hydroxy vitamin D test. But a few times in the past, I've seen for whatever reason, the physician ran a 1-25 hydroxy, which is vitamin D2. And some of the reason that physicians did that, not so much anymore, was that vitamin D2 as a prescription is exactly that. It is a prescription, not over the counter. So you would need a script to get vitamin D2. Even though D3 is what we actually want. D3, your body's going to have a much more robust reservoir. Those are usually the levels that we're looking at in studies. So just a heads up. If you're looking at that and you see a D2, and the catch is you had to get a prescription to get filled, that may be D2. So I would ask the physician why D2, not D3. Generally, that's only in cases of kidney issues and stuff like that. So, getting back to, what is the data on vitamin D? Now, if you look at government websites, NIH, Institute of Health, they're all kind of across the board. I should say IOM, Institute of Medicine. I like to look at data in people who are outside in the sunlight a fair amount. Now, again, that's not as robust as a clinical trial, but it gives us some idea because when you're in the sunlight, your body will convert as much vitamin D that you need. And while you can definitely get a sunburn, you can't overproduce too much vitamin D3 from being in the sun. So that gives us some idea of people who live in more tropical regions. Yeah, maybe they have slightly different genetics and different things going on. But a back of the envelope guess is that we can look at them. They're outside a lot, especially indigenous populations. Not so much in modern society where we hide in air conditioning all the time. But we look at them in what we call these kind of sun worshiper populations. Their levels are around 50 to 70 nanograms per milliliter. That's the US measurements that we're using here. Now, that's definitely on the high end of the side compared to what's been recommended. My personal levels, I like to see around 50. There is some data that if you go super high, it may not be beneficial. You may start having downside effects, especially related to calcium. If you ever get a lot of joint pain, Again, make sure you get a vitamin D test. Could be related to that. I screwed up a couple of years ago and I had a vitamin D test. Was taking a pretty high dose of vitamin D per day. It was around probably 5,000 I used per day. And I got tested again in spring, and I had done this amount the previous winter. I live in Minnesota, so I'm not getting a lot of vitamin D in the winter here at all. Went back in to get tested, and my levels were like 98. And I'm like, holy crap, like, why are my levels like so high? And I couldn't figure it out. And then I'm like, oh, I was taking the same amount in a supplemental form as I did the previous year. But I had traveled a lot more that winter. So I had gone down to South Padre, Texas in the end of October and November. I was down in Costa Rica in March. And I had been to warm climates much more in the wintertime than I ever had the previous winter. So getting that amount of sunlight probably recharged my vitamin D a fair amount. And then I went a little bit over the top since I was still taking the same amount as a supplemental form. So again, if you're not sure where your levels are, get a test. The main test your physician will run is 25 hydroxy vitamin D. My opinion, it's debatable. Probably around 50 is where you want to be. Again, if you're 40, I'm not gonna be that worried about it. I have seen some pretty horribly low levels. I've seen a few people come in around 20, which in my opinion is very low. So around 50, again, my opinion, probably going to be pretty good. One of the next questions then is, well, how much supplemental form per day to get to that level would I need? And there's no way to know that exactly without testing. That's probably going to be your best bet. But there's some pretty interesting data showing that if you are very deficient using 25 hydroxy as a measure, you're going to need a pretty robust amount of vitamin D to get back into that range. So Veith did some very cool work on this, 1999, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And people who are super low, they needed to get above at least the 5,000 IUs per day or higher to get to that part of the curve where they were start to accumulate vitamin D. Now, that doesn't mean you need to stay on that high dose forever. That's just to try to get you out of that deficient range into a much better range. Again, if I were to do just a guess, most people, if they're not getting sufficient vitamin D by being in the sun, which is going to be your first way to get it, again, don't go outside and get burnt like Randy the Red Lobster, but just get some, UV exposure without getting burned. Supplemental use, I see around 2,000 to 5,000 IUs per day. Now, again, that's a loaded answer because you're going to need testing to determine exactly where you're at on that process. So toxicity risk, I like this phrase, which I got from John Cannell. I was talking to him at ACSM in 2009. He said, quote, "Worrying about vitamin D overdose is like worrying about water intoxication while crossing the desert." So intoxication dose, there's almost zero deaths to date. I think there's maybe one or two case studies. The LD50 of vitamin E in dogs, right? So LD50, a lethal dose to kill 50% of a population, is estimated to be about 3,520,000 IUs per kilogram. So if you're a 170-pound human, it's about 271 million IUs, again, at once. So that is a really, really ridiculously high amount. So again, acutely toxic, highly unlikely. Could you have complications of having vitamin D be too high over time? Yes, you absolutely can. In terms of performance and vitamin D, if you're low, there's some data to show that it may help with muscle performance and resistance to fatigue. Once you start getting into an adequate area, is there going to be a benefit to going higher? At least with performance, it does not appear so. So again, I don't think you need super high levels of vitamin D from a performance standpoint. So again, to wrap up, again, this is like a whole lecture I've done to students that could be, 1 to 4 hours long. Best source of vitamin D is sunlight. We can't really OD from vitamin D on the sun. Of course, you can get burnt like crazy, but you're not going to OD from vitamin D. Toxicity is relatively low, but again, it's possible. People's effects with vitamin D supplementation and even sunlight exposure is different, so you have to take that into effect. Most people generally are low. Even people I've seen testing on track athletes in Florida. You think, Florida, why would they be low? Well, they tend to do their running mostly in the early morning or in the evening. So there's not much of the direct sunlight at that point. And they do that to actually avoid heat. Many people still kind of underdose vitamin D, but the only way to know for sure is to get testing through your physician. There are other sources and there are other ways you can get vitamin D testing done. The main testing form is going to be 25-hydroxy. That's going to be a marker for vitamin D3. So that's my micronutrient for today, vitamin D3. If you enjoyed the talk on nutrient deficiencies and micronutrients and what to do with them and super easy ways to just do assessments on clients, check out the Flex Diet. And that's F-L-E-X-D-I-E-T, flexdiet.com. We have a whole breakdown on the micronutrients, how to look at them, how to set up diets and nutrition so that you have adequate amounts, and everything from there. So go to flexdiet.com. Talk to you tomorrow.
Actually gone. Will we ever forget him?
Who?
You know, what's his name?